This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. I thought I would play you something that speak to all of the things we have going on around here on this island, within this state. Sometimes I feel that way, want to whoop and holler. So pretty good stuff if you you get to your wits' end and try to make sense of this whole thing. You need a theme song, and that's my theme song. You know, you call the government. They do nothing for you. The accuracy in government is at the mailbox. When they want their taxes, they want their fees, they want all of that, and then they want your vote. So anyway, I was going to be discussing, there's the subject of GMO, and you know that we had Mr. Gary Hoosier, former state senator at one time, and the head of OEQC, and he's now a Kauai County Councilman, so we're expecting him to call in this morning and talk about the new developments in the bill and the new amendments to the 2491. And GMO, one of the things that really is problematic with GMO, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know much about it. I don't know the science. I just know the human concerns, and they are, my government failed to protect me. My government failed to allow access to records. My government, not Monsanto, not Pioneer, not DuPont, not Syngenta, but my government. And we'll tell that story, but who would allow such a development, such a thing to be plopped at our doorsteps without oversight, without regulatory authority, without prosecution or holding accountable for the overspraying or the spraying or divulging what is being used? Understand now, you want to protect your secrets and your developments, but just those things, that's what I know, and I haven't even started to digest the issue of GMO. It's just that how my government has defrauded me and not represented me. I have Mr. Hoosier on the line now, and we'll just open it up to him.
Well, thanks.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I'm good, Carol. How are you?
Good. I guess Kauai is once again celebrating with another accomplishment, huh?
Well, we're celebrating with a little caution. you know, we got this out of committee. It's a major step, but it's not enough, you know. We really need to do more. We have people literally getting sick over here, and we have doctors, not just one, not two, but we've got 25 different MDs, local physicians, who are supporting this bill and who believe that the actions of this industry are causing health problems here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to mention the environmental problems, the reefs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, let me make sure. I don't know if those that are just joining. This is Mr. Gary Hoosier from Kauai. He's the Kauai County Councilman there, and we're talking about 2491 regarding GMOs and regulations regarding that. And as you know, Mr. Hoosier was a state senator at one time, and boy, we could use one with your feisty approach to things on this side of the waters, too, you know. So
well,
when are you moving and when are you running?
I'm not running for the Speaker of my own house, is what my wife says, you know.
Okay. But what does this mean? If you could just give a little background on 2491 and then tell us what this – I saw it in the paper, but what does it really mean in to you, the guy who's there in the trenches?
Well, you know, Bill 2491 came about because of concerns expressed by people that live in the community. And, you know, it's my job as a council member to listen to the people that live in the county and do my best to deal with those issues. And people were coming to me and complaining about the pesticide abuse or the overuse and the actions of these industries. And I started asking some questions. And and when I asked questions, I couldn't get the answer, Carol. You know, I'd ask basic things like, you know, how much are you spraying? You know, what kind of pesticides are you using? Let alone, what are you growing?
Mm-hmm.
And this industry would tell me nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or worse than that, they would mislead me. And I'm a council member. You know, they're misleading the whole community.
Right.
They would say stuff like, well, it's public information. Just go get it. And so I went out to go get it and found out it's not public information.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it, a small amount of it, technically is, but it's really hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would say stuff like, well, we're only spraying chemicals every other farmer uses. And that's not true. Not in our county. No other farmer uses the quantity or the types of restricted use pesticides that these companies are using. And so out of those conversations and out of that misinformation, I put this bill forward with Councilmember Tim Bynum to say, you have to tell us. We have the right to know. I mean, if we live next to these fields, and you're spraying day after day dangerous chemicals, we have the right to know what those are.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the right to know what those impacts are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the heart of the bill. And fortunately, that heart got passed out of the committee stronger than ever. There are other portions of the bill that did not make it, and we're going to be fighting really hard to put those back in.
And what were they? What were those, if you could name or enumerate a few of them?
Yeah, the two that come to mind that most people are concerned with, the number one is a moratorium on expansion.
Mm-hmm.
These companies already farm or use 13,000 acres of the best farmland on Kauai. And the bill said, you can keep using that, just don't expand until we do an EIS or some comprehensive study to figure out what's going on. You know, so you can keep doing what you're doing, you just can't expand. So that was a moratorium provision. We've got provisions for buffer zones around schools and hospitals, houses, the ocean, you know, the coastline.
Mm-hmm.
And those were watered down, so we need to make those stronger. We also had a provision prohibiting open-air testing of experimental pesticides and experimental GMOs. That got deleted.
Mm-hmm.
And experimental stuff, by definition, means you're not supposed to be using it outside hardly anyway. But those got deleted. So I'm happy on one side that the very core, the right-to-know provisions made it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm disappointed that some of the others were either deleted or watered down. And so we're going to be going back at it again, trying to improve the bill. But basically, I'm pleased that that the majority of the committee, 4-1, passed it out.
Mm-hmm. And so when is the next hearing scheduled? I was trying to follow that. Do you know, has it been put on the agenda?
It has not been scheduled yet.
Okay.
It'll probably be scheduled within 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to say, this is all happening not because of Gary Hoosier, but because we have a community in Kauai County that is unified and focused, educated, and willing to put in the hard work and turn up. And that's why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's really inspirational, I have to tell you,
mm-hmm.
To see people of all ages, doctors, business owners, teachers. You know, we had the largest gathering of people for any political event, certainly, in history. 4,000 people.
Wow.
4,000 people in a community of 65,000.
Man.
Okay.
That is impressive, and it seems to have gotten the attention and gotten momentum, which is very much so missing here on this island. Or I notice in the Big Island, too. Are you working in concert or working with the people there on the Big Island?
I kind of am. I flew to the Big Island last week, and I testified at their hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Councilwoman Margaret Willie and I are in contact with each other. You know, it's two different issues, really. They're dealing with an issue where the industry really is not established in terms of the Dow Chemical and the Monsantos of the world. Here we're dealing with the heavy, intensive research and that heavy pesticide application that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So our bill has a different focus. Their bill bans future GMOs, period.
Mm-hmm.
And ours does not do that.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed one new element or aspect of this. It suggests that the governor is going to get involved. Is that going to be beneficial? Is it? What's the timing? What are the benefits and the shortcomings of this, the governor stepping in and intervening now?
Well, you know, I go back and forth, you know, on this. On one hand, I'm thankful that the governor is paying attention,
mm-hmm.
But I want to say finally, you know,
mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to pay attention. We could certainly use the help of the state, money to fund some of these studies that have to be done. But at the same time, it looks like and it feels like this was an attempt to derail our bill.
Okay.
And I don't know, and I'd like to think that's not the governor's intention.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the industry who's pushing that proposal, that's their intention.
That was my next question. Who is behind it? Is it your efforts, your group, are they asking the governor to intervene or embrace this and join in, or is it the industry?
Well, we had two council members ask the governor for the state to help out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Mel Raposo was leading that effort. He voted no on Friday against the bill. The primary people that the governor spoke with are industry people.
Mm-hmm.
He did not speak to myself or Councilmember Bynum, the co-introducer. I don't believe he spoke to any advocate of the bill in terms of community leaders. And so I was disappointed in that.
Wow.
You know, I'm sure he means well, but we're far beyond voluntary compliance. These companies have volunteered nothing
mm-hmm.
to us over here in our county. There's a lawsuit going on. There's a whole community suing Pioneer Seed. You know, 200 people that live right next to one field. We've had kids go to the hospital. They believe through pesticide exposure. It's never been, tests have never proven that, but it's happened two or three times. We've had sea urchins, 30,000 sea urchins die off. Again, we have doctors. These guys have been working in this hospital for 10 years, delivering babies every single day, and they're testifying that there's a higher rate of birth defects in that hospital than the national average. And they don't know what's causing it, but they know something is wrong. And so, at the minimum, we need disclosure, we need a good environmental impact statement, and we need a moratorium
mm-hmm.
To say, let's figure this out. I mean, there's some serious problems here.
Yeah. Can we, for a moment, compare notes?
Sure.
Your request for information to the government agencies that regulate this, particularly the state agencies, Hawaii State Government, what's your reception? How are you received for your UIPAs or Uniform Information Practices Act or Sunshine Act requests? Can you describe how are you being treated and what the reception is?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, I'm primarily dealing with the Department of Agriculture. The people, the staff that work there are very nice, very polite, very cordial, but it's very difficult to get information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I send out an information request, and it takes a couple of months. They ask for me to pay. We had to pay about $500. The county of Kauai paid to get information on the sales of restricted-use pesticides. And then the company's attorneys and the state attorneys argue over what's public and what's not public.
Mm-hmm.
I had a request. So the companies, when I tell the companies, the industry, I'm concerned, they'll say stuff like, we're inspected. We're inspected on a regular basis by the Department of Ag.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask for the inspection logs to see how often they're inspected and what those inspections show.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes me months to get those. And when I get them, 43% of the inspections are redacted or deleted. I can't tell what they are.
Mm-hmm. I have been in receipt of the same treatment and in fact, even to a greater degree, just complete meddling on the part of the Attorney General. Not only have I received the notes for high dollar amounts, and then they were going to redact it, so you're looking at black lines in a document that
right.
will render nothing useful. So that's one concern. But I have an incident where I've contacted the health department some months ago. And in asking for just a simple inspection of a matter that had taken place 2 years ago, so it's closed, it's not an investigation. I just want to see the results of the investigation. To date, I've received nothing, but what I have received, the explanation is that we had to contact the Attorney General, who then contacted Monsanto to ask them what would they like to release. And what do they agree with the release? So, in other words, our government agency who is regulating this is going in and doing their job, I suspect. But on the other hand, when it comes to why would they have to call Monsanto or any of the other researchers or companies to agribusiness to ask them permission as to what they should disclose?
And I'm getting essentially the same type of response, and I don't know if it's an overly cautious State Department or whether they believe that their responsibility is to the industry and not to the public.
Right.
You know, we're over and over again, you know, I'm finding that the Department of Agriculture, I mean, good and well-meaning people that they are, I believe they feel their responsibility is to the agricultural industry,
right,
not
right.
to the public. You know, we had an incident, we had them before our council, the Department of Ag, and we asked them directly, is there evidence of pesticide drift? And it's not supposed to drift, but do you ever find it? And they said, yes. And they said, what do you do? There was a question. And they say, well, when we find it, after we do tests, we notify the applicator. We notify the company. And mm-hmm. we started an investigation. And I said, what about notifying the public? And they said, no, we don't do that.
Right.
We only notify the public after the investigation's complete. And how long does it take the investigation to be complete? Sometimes 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so what kind of protection is that?
Well,
if there's pesticide drift happening all the time.
It is this behavior that caused me and prompted me to ask you the question about the governor's and involvement, because he already has the ability to make a difference in disclosure and waiving fees, because it is in the interest of the public. But these high fees to get black lines through your papers, I that's why I was concerned and had that question. But if you got a moment, let me see. There's some callers. If you're calling, let's talk about this subject here. I don't want to I want to keep continuity on this subject. So if
sure.
your question is about something else, we'll have to postpone it until another hour. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hello, Carol.
Yes.
Yeah, I had a question for Mr. Huger. Now, on that bill, does it just address restricted chemicals and experimental chemicals, or other chemicals also used by regular farmers? I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. That's an excellent question. This bill is designed for large agribusinesses only. And so there's a threshold use. It's a certain amount of pounds and gallons of restricted use. So only companies that use lots of restricted use pesticides are affected. So regular farmers, and again here in Kauai County, no other farmer uses anything even close to what these guys are using.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the threshold, is the restricted use. However, so if you're using above the threshold of restricted use, you have to disclose all of your use, whether it's experimental or whether it's general use, Roundup, and that kind of thing. But it only applies to the large companies. So small farmers are not affected at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably, because I know that was a rumor put out by the companies that this is going to, every farmer is going to have to disclose every chemical, and that's absolutely not the case. You know, we're not saying that pesticide or herbicides, and I have to qualify that. The definition of pesticide includes herbicides, fungicides, and all this stuff, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the bill does not say we're banning all these pesticide use. We're only saying the very high intense users need to disclose, number one, and need to agree not to spray next to schools and hospitals and streams and that kind of thing. So there is a threshold. It's only for the very large agribusiness industrial farms.
Mm-hmm. So it seems that the way they handle this, if there are benefits to GMO, they are clouded or shrouded in secrecy, and also we won't be able to gauge the negative impacts, nor will we really know the positive impacts other than seeing it on the shelf. That's
right, and that's correct. And I should add, the pesticide use is a primary focus
mm-hmm.
of this bill, but it also requires GMO disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're growing and researching GMO crops, you have to also disclose that to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not asking for trade secrets. We're not asking for formulas or anything at all, just the public information that they have that they can release to us mm-hmm. in a format that we can understand.
Now, for example, it's critical, almost life-saving, if, in fact, you're detecting a cluster of cancers or a unique illness amongst a population, let's say there on Kauai or Oahu. But if we go and the doctors struggle to explore all of the possibilities that are causes and effects, and yet in this building or these buildings or this practice is occurring that might be suspect, but you don't know that you even have it going on or it's around or could be contributing to the problem, how can you even address and who would dare stand by for the sake of developing a chemical or a crop would allow this to happen, and later we find it is the culprit? That's just me speculating, but just to convey a message.
No, it's you're absolutely right. We had on Friday a doctor, a medical doctor, physician from the west side of Kauai who works in that community. He testified, and he said that his own daughter, I believe she was about 8 years old, woke in the middle of the night last week, and came in and said, "Daddy, I'm having a hard time breathing. I'm having a asthma kind of issue." And the doctor and his wife smells what they believe to be chemicals in the air, a chemical
mm-hmm.
smell.
Mm-hmm.
And they live next to the fields in that area. And he said, you know, he doesn't have the right to know what they're spraying or if they're spraying. And he's a doctor and he lives in the area and his little girl can't breathe. And he was furious.
Mm-hmm.
And if this bill passes, he will know. At least he can make a proper diagnosis. You know,
mm-hmm.
He will know if it's sprayed or not sprayed. He'll know what chemical. Right now, they don't even know what to test for
mm-hmm.
Because there's no right to know.
Well, I was standing last week. There was a fire up there that started. It was described as a prescribed burn by the military, conducting a prescribed burn. This was a fire. They knew what they were going to be doing.
Yeah,
but
I read
guess
about that.
What? It got out of control, but when you're spraying pesticides and all of those things, is it possible those things that we can't see, do they get out of control? I just something I would like to throw out there and say
right.
that it, if it comes down to this, the simple debate of you aren't willing to label it, no one's saying, for me, a papaya that is good in tasting, and I don't know if there's detrimental effects health-wise, but they taste good. So, I don't know, but at least label it so that I, as a customer, would know the origin of what it is. It's left up to me to educate myself and eat wisely. But on the other hand, the pesticides and the willingness to test, and then you have the government protecting this entity, it's like this part of the equation doesn't fit in this discussion. It's un-American or whatever.
Right. And some of these chemicals have warning labels 100 pages long,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not exaggerating, 100 pages long, and some of them, many of them, are banned in Europe and banned in other countries. And besides labeling so-called approved GMO crops, which I support, what we have over here, we have experiments on unapproved crops going on. We don't know what they're growing. We don't know where they're growing. And so these are experimental. They're not approved for human consumption. They're experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what happens when wild pigs go into these fields, which they do, and eat this experimental corn, and then the pig hunters go kill the pigs and serve them at luaus, you know? I mean,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff has not been studied. No matter what the scientists say about how safe, this is experimental crops. And by definition, no one knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that we need to take reasonable protections and regulation in our community.
You know, way back, even in the days of the working in the cotton fields and going to college and talking about environmental sciences, there was always this debate. If we use too much chemicals, we will create a super bug, a super insect who will build an immunity to this kind of chemical. So the art was to build a stronger, better chemical. But in the process, are we, as we go ahead, are we building a stronger, more adaptive bug of some sort? Insects? Who knows? But
well, I think it's clear that, I mean, even science that defends the biotech industry say clearly that's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they need to develop even more pesticides to kill the new bugs.
Mm-hmm. So we're basically spraying ourselves in a corner, not painting ourselves in a corner. We're spraying ourselves in, because there's always going to be a bug of some sort that's going to adapt.
Right. And these companies make money on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
They make money selling the chemicals, and then they make money developing the plants so they resist the chemicals, you know? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's government's role, as you know. It's government's role to protect the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, government is the only entity that has the resources and the power to make sure that all corporations, all businesses are done in a manner that is positive and protects the people's interests and the environment's interests.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's a pesticide company or a bank or a pharmaceutical company, that's government's role, and that's what we're trying to do over here in our community.
Right. These GMOs that exist out there, let's say, when we use them, who benefits? Isn't there a danger in some types of crops that only certain companies will be able to control the seed, and that your product that you produce is only for consumption and not for collecting the seeds? Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's been true for a long time, though, even before GMOs, mm-hmm. where the seed companies and many niche markets, corn, for example, have controlled the market on seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I believe something like 80% of the world's seeds are controlled by about seven companies.
Mm-hmm. I offer that because I observe a number of farmers advocate for, on behalf of Pioneer and the GMO entities, but my concern is they're seeing half the light in the tunnel, at the end of the tunnel. They're really not seeing the full light. And at the end of the tunnel, they get screwed too, but they're advocating. So in my concerns is that to say exercises and approach it with some caution. Don't be extreme in your advocation for them. You don't have to embrace either side, but protect your own interests, farmers.
Exactly. But I think the nature of the business has developed where these companies, and Monsanto has a history of this, and a lot of the other countries have similar practices. If you question them, you question their science, you question their, you know, their benefits, they come down hard on you, really hard. That's how it's been over here. They're running ads in the paper. They're accusing anyone who believes there should be more regulation. They accuse you of being anti-science and anti-business. And we had the Hawaii Nurses Association supporting this bill that we're trying to pass. And you're getting letters to the editor criticizing nurses and saying they're not scientists. And it's giving me a break, you know. These nurses are the ones that treat us day after day. They know when we're sick and we're well.
Let's see if we can entertain a caller here. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question for Mr. Hoosier?
Hey, what's up, Carol Cox?
Real quick, Jacob, we got something going on here. So what you got for the GMO? Anything? Real quick.
Oh.
Real quick now. Make it quick. There's others on the line waiting.
What's going on with the Hawaii Nurses Association?
Okay, well, we'll take your call off the air, all right? We'll answer that.
I don't know.
Aloha.
Yeah, the Hawaii Nurses Association is the organization that represents 6,000 nurses around the state in various hospitals, and they represent nurses in their collective bargaining and working conditions. We also have the Hawaii State Teachers supporting the bill, Local 5, hotel workers, and again, a whole bunch of just independent doctors. We have one pediatrician here who did his research, and American Academy of Pediatrics. This is the main publication that advises pediatricians on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they specifically say that pediatricians should support right-to-know legislation and buffer zones, and that pesticides hurt kids or anybody else.
You know, warm.
Mm-hmm. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead. Yeah, and anyway, let me see if another caller. Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question?
Hello, Carol.
Yes.
Yeah, another question for Mr. Hoosier. I believe I heard you say that you do support some GMO crops, and would you please tell me what crops you do support research on? I'll take it up there. Thank you.
Yeah, I've got mixed feelings about this. I believe that technology has a lot to offer our world. I have increasing, every day I have more reservations about genetic modification of life. And, you know, you hear about rice being developed that's actually going to add nutrition and add vitamins and whatnot. You know, so I think there is potential. It's the industry, though, is focused on the kind of plants that sell more chemical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's the problem. I can't think, honestly, right now, as I sit here, of any genetically modified crop that I think is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having said that, when I go buy papayas in the supermarket, I don't always know. I've probably eaten GMO papayas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat processed food, even though I don't like to. I eat Dorito chips and this stuff. And so I'm eating this stuff, but deep down, I don't feel good about it.
Right.
And I think there's other ways to deal with these very same issues. Too often, the Western world, my world that I grew up in, they're looking for the fast, easy answer. And so right now, the fast, easy answer,
Hello.
Let's just change the gene. Let's just change the gene. And I think there's other ways, healthier ways, better ways for the planet to deal with these problems than just changing the gene.
Yes. Caller, go ahead. You have a comment or question for Mr. Hoosier?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, great. Thank you, Carol. Hello, Representative Hoosier.
How you
doing? I need to ask a serious question on the consumer side of this issue of GMOs and on the front side of preparing them with the fertilizers and stuff. Are there any indicators that insomnia is occurring?
That what is occurring?
Insomnia.
You know, I don't know.
All right, that's good enough, sir. That's a start. Now, let's go ahead on the treatment side. I went into two emergency room admissions that are claiming insomnia. Both of them sent me along without even a discussion on benzodiazepine medicine rest, and they were the other one at Kuakini was, I'm just fine. Just fine. Well, mothers that have sick babies are just fine, too, with their insomnia, but how can we deal with this? How is the hospital staff prepared to receive unusual diagnostics?
Yeah, I don't think we're as prepared as we need to be, that's for sure. And that's part of what we're trying to do over here is to take a break and do the proper research and see what impacts are occurring.
Very well, then. Thanks for giving my brain a little exercise in this arena, and I'll keep it listening.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And let me ask you, first of all, this is the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Mr. Gary Hoosier. He is serving now, currently, the Kauai County Councilman, former state senator for Kauai. And this is a Carol Cox Show. You can pick this up at carol@carolcox.com. Tell your friends, and we'll go ahead. I have a question. Does the federal government or the state government subsidize financially any of these entities, the GMO entities, that are actively involved in the state here?
You know, I think it depends on the definition of subsidy. You know,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine they do offer support. I mean, the state of Hawaii, I mentioned before, these companies are using approximately 15,000, between 13,000 and 15,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
About 5,800 acres is state land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the state of Hawaii is leasing their land to these companies. If that's a subsidy, I'm not sure. But they're leasing it. The county of Kauai charges lower property taxes for agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue what they're doing is not agriculture. It's industrial research, and they should not be getting. So they're effectively getting a subsidy on their property taxes because they're paying the same property tax rate that the guy down the road who's trying to grow tomatoes to sell the people that live here to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not producing products we eat locally. They're
yeah.
doing research.
Now, speaking of environmental impact statements, wouldn't this be the nexus or the foot in the door to trigger, because it is state land, so 343, 342, those areas in state law, wouldn't that give rise or cause for some kind of environmental action, environmental impact statement or EA, because they're using these chemicals and it's something totally different and it's having an impact on the environment?
You know,
am I stretching this?
You're not stretching it, Carol, at all. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened. Okay, you understand Chapter 343 in EIS law more than most people do. As you know, I was director of the office for a period of time, and so I know it probably better than any legislator does. And you're right. If you use state land or state resources, that's a trigger. And so that should trigger, at the minimum, somebody to look at it and sign a piece of paper saying it's exempt or do an EA or do an EIS. And these leases, this acreage has not complied with Chapter 343.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When I look into it, there's only a 120-day window for which to file a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
When this happens, and that window passed years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The leases have been in place for a couple of years and some 6 or 7 years in others. And so there's no mechanism to ask them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think any honest person would look at this activity and say, yes, it deserves, it will have impact. It's not just growing tomatoes or, whatever, you know. I mean, this is industrial research. It definitely has impacts. It should, at the minimum, do an environmental assessment, if not a full-on EIS, which I believe.
And there lies a problem and causes me great concern that when I see the governor now speaking, there are so many steps along the way that would have ensured the public some measure of protection. But right now, we're up 0 to 90, the score is. They have 90. And this is just about education. Not that I agree or disagree with GMO or anything. It's just that the process to screen, to educate, to allow doctors, to allow anyone to, I mean, it may impact crops that are not GMO or what have you. Or streams. So this thing, it's a wild, wild west approach to this, the way we've handled this. And that's why I said earlier in the opening, I don't know any of the science of GMO, but of the human aspect of it, we have failed and continue to fail. And we use government agencies, state agencies, city agencies, county agencies to serve as an insulator to prevent the general public from knowing. I think that in itself, if we have a spill of some truck, we get to know what that is. Can that person now proclaim, well, here's precedent. The GMO companies don't have to disclose there, so forget CERCLA, RCRA, the public's right to know. I'm going to exclude myself.
Right. Exactly right. And
that's what the real bugaboo that's growing out of this is, that we're creating a government that is immune to any scrutiny or transparency, as well as creating a poison to kill the worst of the bugs. So we're going to lose either way.
And whenever somebody starts asking questions, the industry lawyers lawyer up. and intimidate the government lawyers and threaten. They're threatening to sue the county of Kauai for the right to spray pesticides next to school.
Really?
And I just cannot fathom that.
They are threatening, and there's actually a formal notice, a letter of a right to sue or some kind.
In public testimony, a council member asked the corporate attorneys, Marjorie Bunster is one, Paul Olson's the other, asked them directly, if we pass this bill, will you sue the county? And they said, absolutely. and I just cannot fathom that they would actually take that action when all we're asking for is some basic protections. And truthfully, I don't think they would, you know, because they would lose in the court of public opinion. That it would turn the community and the state even more against them than it's already the case. They can well afford these minor protections that we're asking for. It's not going to break the bank. It's not like there's some struggling small business that we're going to hurt. These are multi-billion dollar multinational chemical companies. They can afford to set back 500 feet from a school. 500 mm-hmm. feet from a school is nothing mm-hmm. when you're looking at pesticide drift. It should mm-hmm. be a mile.
Right. Well, you know, this brings me, we've come to the pool of reflection, I should describe this. And what I'm about to say is that I don't want anybody to interpret this, but it's just to give draw parallels. If a person with cocaine or crack stands within 100 yards or come within a school at a certain distance, that's a felony, right? And all they're doing right. is selling it or possessing it. But you're saying that a GMO company can spray and they're threatening. Where is the balance? One is for the sake of the children, or is it just control of the drug trafficking? Or, you know, you follow. So on one hand, they're aggressive in protecting the children from the crackheads or the dealers. But on the other hand, the GMOs can spray anywhere and threaten to sue if you dare challenge them. Something's wrong with that.
It really is. And our community sees this. And they hear it firsthand. I mean, again, it's public testimony. And they're just flabbergasted. And they're not going to accept it, period. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, the law allows them to go right up to the border, the property line. You could have a playground on one side and a farm GMO field on the other, and they can spray right there. The law allows it. Now, they don't usually do that, but the law allows it. And we're saying, you know, you got to be back at least 500 feet. Again, we've had multiple incidents of kids getting sick here. Mm-hmm. And it's happened in Honolulu, too. It's happened in Waipahu. It's happened in Waihua.
Wailua? I've told it was in Wailua. They suspect some sick. I don't have any confirmation, but again, you can't have that many things springing up. Well, it could be other factors, too, but, you know.
You know, when the Nurses Association were deciding to support this bill, they brought up, I believe it was a Wailua, they talked about Waihua General Hospital is where the kids came.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they saw kids throwing up, and they couldn't find out what chemical was being used in terms of pesticides. So it's a very real issue. I mean, mm-hmm. the warnings have skulls and crossbones on some of these things, you know?
Yeah.
It's very clear. This is nasty stuff.
Well, hold on.
And the mm-hmm. other thing, before I forget, one thing that it's important for people to realize, I think, and I didn't realize it when I first started learning about this, but again, these are research farms. So they're spraying, you know, 4, 5, 6 times mm-hmm. the amount of pesticides that they're spraying in Kentucky. The mm-hmm. Kentucky tobacco fields
right.
have the highest level nationally of pesticide use. But on Kauai, they're spraying like 4 or 5 times that amount because it's research-based and because you get at least 2 growing seasons, maybe 3. And so the quantity of this stuff, not only is it really the harshest of the chemicals, the quantity that they're doing because it's research industrial farming.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Let's see if we have a caller here. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question for Mr. Hooser?
Very serious comment. I live in Waipahu, Carol. Can we open a case? Can the representative give us a referral over here or somebody to work with? I need a diagnostic bad. And my landlord's awfully sick. All's well, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe we ask the health department.
Yeah, I'll call you back later on this, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah. Now I remember when there was a school there in Waipahu, that hit the news that the kids got sick. But no, and we're just trying to get our own 5 companies here, and this is not just GMO companies. Here Kauai Coffee also uses a whole bunch of this, but these are the large agribusinesses. The worst offenders other GMO companies, there's no question about it. Mm-hmm. But this bill applies to all large users of pesticides.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question real quick?
I just want to say that from the history of Monsanto's and those guys, absolutely they will sue us, without a doubt, because that's what they do. So we're going to have to figure out how we can counter sue them back, because I know a lot of people who got sick, and, you know, they saw them spraying, and then, you know, they got sick. But he said he didn't think that they would sue us, and I'm pretty sure they will.
We're preparing for that also. Earth Justice is, you know, on record agreeing to defend the county, defend the bill for free. The Center for Food Safety, which is a leading legal advocate for this stuff, is stepping up to help us.
Well, thank God.
There's an organization called the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law. They also have said, we'll do this for free. And they've been to the United States Supreme Court and won. We've got a number of local lawyers who have looked at this. And so, you know, we're going to fight it every step of the way.
So can you do me a favor, compile a list of the organizations that's going to help for free, and we'll run something here asking for donations. Everybody out there that is concerned should be putting a little nickel in the Nickelodeon, I guess.
Okay. There hasn't been a legal fund properly established, but I believe there will be in the near future.
Well, let's do it, and I'll run it every day.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Carol. And so we're prepared, and we know we're dealing with the strongest, biggest, you know, baddest corporations around. And I've seen what they've done in other communities too. You know, I'm hopeful that they're just rattling their saber and they're not really going to do it, because there will be a local pushback.
Mm-hmm.
But if they sue, we have legal people who are ready to defend us for free.
But I think they may, as big and bold as they may think, I think they've complicated matters by circumventing using the state agencies the way they have, and the government agencies. I think they'd personally find it troublesome in this process, because they're not coming to the courtroom clean. And who are they going to say that the state has been regulating them, right? And yet they've been concealing. Here's the deal. In every lawsuit, there's a process called discovery. So while they may want to, I think the game would be up if they file a case. Then we get to see everything, and then we get to see. So, you know, he may be the bully on the – we're going to pay anyway. It's the public's going to pay one way or the other, through sickness or illness, or through our noses through the bank account. So either way, we're losing. Yeah. So.
And I think you're right. It's a good point. I mean, there's a downside for them suing, because discovery is part of the process. I believe they've grossly underestimated – the community's resolve on this.
I think you're right. And that just suggests that they don't really know when, you know, it's they may sue. Okay, fine. But on the other hand, they also may stay a step across the line and find themselves in a bad predicament and having to disclose everything. And where does it end? Right?
And the world is watching on this too. We had the New York Times is doing an article, PBS is doing a story. There's a lot of people watching this, and so they're going to be watching closely. And there's, you know, repercussions of what happens here beyond our shores.
Yeah. Well, Gary, thank you. If you have anything closing, we're coming down to the last minute or so, but feel free, and I'd like to have you back.
Thank you. You know, I just want to compliment the people in my community and the people around the state who are willing to take the time, Carol, to roll up their sleeves. They're not getting paid for this. They're volunteers. They care about their community. And, you know, they're doing it the right way. They're actually reading the bill. They're reading legal court cases. They're studying labels. And it's a real informed, not just committed, not just passionate, but a real informed community. And we're getting, again, medical doctors, PhDs, people that are stepping up. And each time one guy steps up or one woman steps up, it empowers somebody else to step out.
Great.
And to say, yeah, you know, I was concerned too, but I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to look like a weird anti-GMO guy or something.
Well, give us your email right quick, or a website where we can get in touch, and we're down to the last 30 seconds real quick.
Okay. You can just Google Gary Hooser blog, Gary Hooser blog, GaryHooser.com. My information's right there, and yeah, people are welcome to email me or call me. It's all right there.
H-O-O-S-E-R, Gary Hooser.
H-O-O-S-E-R, yeah. GaryHooser.com is the easiest way. That's a campaign website, but it's not active, but my information's right there.
All righty, and we'll post
it. And I'm not campaigning for anything, okay?
Don't worry, you're doing good. Whatever you're doing, we do.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for all the work that you do and for allowing me to answer some questions.
All right, here's a standing invitation. Anytime, just call up and we'll go. All righty?
All right, on, Carol.
Aloha, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Aloha and good morning again. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. I was hope you joined me in the first hour. I had County Councilman Kauai County Councilman Gary Hoosier. We were talking GMO and some of the problems, and it's as you see, it's today there's a topic in the a story on this subject at Star Advertiser. Mainland cash fuels the fight. I don't know if it's a fight, but it's fueling something. But anyway, welcome your calls, and if you still, obviously Mr. Hoosier had some other things to do, but I'm grateful that he took the time to call up and participate. And if you have any comments on that subject, we can continue it. And there's some other things. We'll talk a little bit about molasses and sludge and, you know, and we'll just talk about the whole thing and talk about government. I was wondering if we could revamp government by hiring Sir Trucking and just pick up the whole load of them. You know, I wouldn't want them spilled on the road, but, you know, maybe a good dumping with this legislature. Can you imagine government allowing such a thing to happen? And you heard me talk about the sludge and how Kimberly Pine and Miley Shimabukuro, those people from the Waianae area, how they try to play it safe and run in and help and attach their names and print out that we did this. And when they get the first phone call, it's just a casual. And by the way, I'm not going to go into great details, but I spoke with the city official and some of the claims made by Kimberly Pine in her original representation regarding DPP. 50% of that was not accurate and was false. So I'm not going to give her much more airtime. I think that it's clear who she is and what she is. She hadn't found an issue that she can't jump on board. And just to illustrate, I participated in a parade some while back in the Nanakuli parade. They were celebrating the children's growth. So just to show you now, and I have the photographs, to show you what Kimberly Pine, to what extent she will go to stay in office and lie to you and trick you. I mean, so I'm not going to even bother to engage. She used the Eric Ryan issue to her personal fight. And I've withheld the playing the tape of her talking, slamming Eric Ryan for some while. But she took a personal fight, her own trash in her own life with the issues with Berg and Ryan and what have you, and managed to get it into the House, State House of Representatives and formulate a bill and present it as if it was cybercrime. So Kimberly Pine is not to be taken lightly. She just takes the voter lightly. So let's send her a message when it comes to the election. Yeah, you sound good. You write good stories about what you did. But the reality is, in the handling of the sludge, like many other things, you did go there. You did get a call like other legislators did. And you wrote back and said they're going to study it and look at it. So until it hit the news, Kim Pine wasn't there. But this thing about Nanakuli, I began to tell you. There was a parade, and the declaration was, we don't want it to be political. This was a celebration of the children there in Nanakuli for their accomplishment in sports and various things. So Kim Pine, of all the politicians who respected that, Tom Berg respected it. He could have done exactly what, and the other legislators could have. But here's what Kimberly Pine did. Kimberly Pine took one of the jerseys and didn't take, was given, whatever. And she then snuck up onto the parade trailer, the float, one of the floats, and blended in with the little children, wave her sign. So if I need to say anything else about Kimberly Pine, then you're not listening and you don't care. And if you vote for her, good for you. You deserve her. And you'll get more things dumped on you. But if you buy into this game, if someone would bother to take a shirt from a child and put it on so that they're small-minded and small-framed to fit in such a shirt. So I'm just telling you, you can read everything about her and all the other papers try to pump her up. You're going to hear the truth here. The lady has not very little interest in your best interest, period. So anyway, if you want to take it later, I can provide you documents and photographs of her with her cute little face up there amongst the children waving, you know, for election purposes. So anyway, speaking of children, here's something that's exciting that's occurring. 5-0 Boxing, it's Grooves for Gloves, a benefit fundraiser, October 5th, 2013, from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Kalailoa Raceway Park. And these are a pretty good program, and it's to help children. It's going to benefit children and get them off the street and give them something to do. I mean, I know some of you are there, but boxing, well, that's better than having them to try to deal with the streets and fight for themselves or get into fights. Like one could argue the same thing about why do we have kids learning taekwondo or tai chi or karate, you know. Same thing. So if you have a name. But I think you should, if you're interested in participating and supporting this, here's some of the things. They're featuring Champ Lanai, H. Trey Nessian, Nine, Princess Ilona, and special guests signing autographs is Ron the Machine Gun, John Harris, Hitman Sarmiento, Russell Doan, Nico Vitale, and many more. The ticket price is $20 pre-sale and at the door, $25. For information or other purchase of tickets, please call 808-668-4285. Brought to you by Awohi Trucking Brothers, H. Trey, JN Automotive, Kamaina Kids, JS Intel Circus, and then KRP, the Kalailoa Raceway Park, and the union, I mean, International Union of Operating Engineers, Iron Workers Union, and T. Ida Contracting. If I've murdered your name, I apologize. I'm just trying to squint here. Paradise Lua, and Insurance Associates, and Harley Davidson. So, and Kamaaina Kids. So, guys, and I'm sorry, there's another one, Oka's Auto Body, and R&KA. So, equipment. Anyway, I'll give another plug here shortly. But, yeah, if you can support this, again, it's Grooves for Gloves, and it's October 5th, 2013. It's a benefit fundraiser. Yeah. So, anyway, that's a good thing. And I can tell you, you may not know the importance of it, but in a community that's strifed with struggling of drugs and kids having recreation, well, in these areas, kids don't even have air conditioning, so, but anyway, in schools. But I know the benefit of those things. On a hot day, you got nothing to do, and programs like that sure benefit you and encourages you and teaches you something positive. So that's good. So anyway, a couple things on the, and you know me, I'm very careful, but I'm concerned, and I have, as one retired reporter, I'm told, said that I'm okay, but I won't always get to the bottom of things. And I say to that is that that's a very shallow description of me. Because to what man's intellect allows him to delve into something or dive into it or explore is left up to that man. Every man knows his depth. Because if he's equipped, or every woman, he's educated or in a certain field, what is the depth that he or she or heights that he or she can go? So in this case, the molasses. We see there's a tendency in some media sources is that if they can get you a good story and bring you good eye-popping shots and close up to the scene, that's okay. And you're educated there, and you're left with that image, and it says something, and you get to draw the conclusions and what have you. But for me, I welcome that and opportunities and really don't care, because that's why I buy cameras with zoom lens, so I don't need to go up and ask them permission. I can stand a half a mile away or whatever is necessary to shoot a picture, which is sufficient. But, you know, being able to get on the boat and go up to the molasses, the leak, and all of that, that's good. I mean, it shows you. But here's the problem. Over there on TV, you saw there's a gentleman by the name of Chris Lee, and he was listed as a safety manager for Matson. And you know that the Coast Guard got involved. And it wasn't just a Coast Guard. It was a national strike force for the Coast Guard. So again, I don't want to impugn this gentleman's integrity or say bad things about him, but here's some curiosities or some things that I'm interested in knowing. This gentleman, Mr. Chris Lee, and I don't know, and I've sent him a letter on September 26th asking some questions, telling him that I have a radio show. But he's also was or is, and I don't know the current status, a lieutenant commander in the United States Coast Guard. So my concern, and he has expertise. He was in the BP Deep Horizon well blowout. They're involved in that cleanup. And he is very astute and very intelligent and is one of the greatest authorities on responses. So I personally, if this is all factual, I would like to him to explain to us and share with us to what role, and did he have any role, and I file a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request. So I raise this issue because what I saw in the response, if you go back and listen to this podcast that I've done, I was very specific up front in the beginning. I didn't trust the state agencies, not because I just didn't simply trust them, but I saw them show up at a gunfight with toothpicks, so to speak. They didn't come prepared, but they are trained and they're experts, so we're told. We pay them as experts, so we're told. But they just didn't arrive alive. They arrived lethargic, sluggish, looking for someone to guide them, to hold their hands, because it appears that decisions had already been made before they stepped out and their feet touched the cement or the asphalt around these areas in the harbor. They didn't want to talk. They being Gary Gill, as I had said to you, he wouldn't give me an interview because I don't have thousands of listeners, and to quote him. But again, the way this thing unfolded and how they presented it, as I've told you, it was 223,000 gallons of syrup molasses that had spilled. But then it changed from that to 14,000 ton. And what average layman does not measure in tons? They measure in gallons or ounces or quarts. So was this a play on words to diminish psychologically? But again, the state say they collected, and now they told you, well, you know, it's you know, eventually they came out and start talking about it, and they then knew that it had leaked before, and so those things are up front. You can see those, but here's something going on right now. The attempt on the part of the state to still minimize and marginalize independent queries from the public, from the media. And so, like myself, I file a FOIA, or UIPA in this sense of the state, Uniform Information Practices Act. And you can file that and ask for records. So I file it, and I get a response back. Well, because we had so many requests, we're going to take our time and put it together, and then we'll post it online so that we'll just feed it all to all the media at once. You see, they're controlling. And then to add insult to injury, I'm call to ask and send a request, formal request for certain and or specific documents. But another reporter will get the benefit of my knowledge. Basically, it's not my work product, but if I'm astute or if the people at KGMB have a specific interest and ask for that and unique, well, the state just says, well, we'll just hold off and we'll just put it together. And in response to yours, we'll do the same thing, give everybody what you asked for. So there's something suspect there. Then the National Coast Guard, the strike force, the United States Coast Guard comes in. What did they leave us with? Well, I think they left us with, well, things are looking pretty good. The plume floated out. So was this part of a ploy? So I hope to bring to you, either through the FOIA or Mr. Chris Lee bring in, and again, I'm just speaking at this time to share with you that I have these concerns. I'm not making a statement yet, but I would want to know to what role and when did he leave the United States Coast Guard. And does he still have affiliations? Does he still have connection with those people that came out here? Does he have the ear of the commandant? I am concerned because if that is the case, he's had relationship with the state and their response and the hazardous emergency response and all of that on the Coast Guard. So I submit to you that in this whole process, it was handled as if a child had spilled popcorn on the theater floor. If you ask me to give you my summation is just that. I said earlier they walked around with the thumbs up, you know, but it's Sunday morning and I only get one time to say bad things per week. So, but the problem is now we get the EPA to come in, and I don't know what they're going to do to look at it, and so does the lack of enforcement on the part of DOT when they discovered that spill or that, quote, leak? Or the second time they notified them, does that exonerate Mattson? Because the government had an obligation to enforce the law, and the government, state government, had an obligation to notify the Clean Water Branch because they are allowed to enforce the Clean Water Act. They're authorized on the federal law or federal agreement or whatever you call it, memorandum of understanding on the agreement or what have you. So when Mattson say that we're going to pay for the damages, let's back up here. Who quantified the damages? You know, a wise man would never speak and accept claim if it hadn't been quantified. You know, it's like a truck driving down the highway and he spills a load of sand and it dings a couple of cars, and all of a sudden there were only 30 cars in traffic, but 130 is calling up wanting to be paid because no one bothered to quantify or determine specifically how many cars, to closest exactness, were impacted in that scenario. So to stand up and say, we're going to accept the blame and we're going to accept the cost, what costs are you accepting? And where is the state at? And it's a DLNR. Now, I'm told they went out and videotaped it, but what are they going to do? And then when they do decide to pay, what will the governor do? What will he authorize Mr. Isla to settle for? Because remember, I told you, there was a settlement on the Port Royal, if I'm not mistaken, or one of those. We know that the money was released, but we don't know what the status of the money is and where it went and where it was spent. So all kinds of things should have been fleshed out in this process. They should have said, we have no comment. But instead, it just seemed like there was an orchestrated effort on the part of the state, DOT, on the part of DLNR, on the part of the Department of Health. They just didn't arrive alive to do what professionals do in this process. Molasses leaking into the ocean and state waters is a violation. At some point, the state needs to adopt a position. But like we were talking about the GMO, the state conducts inspection. And about that GMO inspection, that this one request that I made, after I made the request for the GMO, everything was fine until the person said, oh, I have to call the attorney general. And the attorney general had to call their attorney and ask if they what part of this they want to release. But what happened is that the inspector that went and did that did not do the proper job in inspecting. So even whatever I get, it's going to be somewhat flawed. So going back to the molasses, if we have these kinds of relationships, don't just take my word and my frustrations as you hear in my voice. Listen to their own words and look at what they convey to you. 26,000 fish. Well, I want to know, I'd like to see a chain of custody and see who counted them. And, what does a tilapia constitute a take? Because a tilapia is an introduced species, you know, an alien species in a sense. Does that come into play? Or some of the other fish that may have been introduced here or what have you? Or how many birds, seabirds, terns, alku'u, or night heron, black crowned night heron? How many of those were impacted? So when we say we hear they're going to take care of it and pay for it, I think it's premature at best and probably disingenuous at the worst. So I'm hoping to bring back to you this information on, and hopefully Mr. Chris Lee, Lieutenant Commander Chris Lee, or whatever he is, former, if he would be so open to share with us and give us some insight. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yo, what's up, Carol Cox?
Oh, not much. Let's go, man. What you got?
Oh, you know, on Friday night, I was at the Mililani football game.
Mm-hmm.
It was homecoming for us.
Mm-hmm.
Were you at the homecoming game?
No, I didn't make it, Jacob.
You want to know what was so cool?
Real quick, Jacob, because you see, I gave you one call this morning, give us a little consideration. That way you're part of the family, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so go ahead real quick, and in the future, this hit me and stick me with when you make that one phone call, all right?
Well, I mean, I like to call you. And,
oh, I'd like to, too, but there are other people that are out there that maybe...
I got to sit on the sidelines at the game, and I got to, like, all the players came over and said, what's up, Jacob? You know, and then after the game...
Well, you're lucky, Jacob.
I got the game ball after the game.
So here's what I wanted to share with you, Jacob. I'm going to ask you, we get one of your parents and accompany you down here to the station one morning. Come down to the station and sit in with us one morning.
Oh, I don't know if I can, though.
Well, ask your moms and your father and arrange it, all right?
Oh, I mean,
and that way you'll see what difficulty it is to, when you're on a roll. You'll then understand the difficulty. You're talking, all right?
I was on the sidelines. I got the game ball after the game, and I made Mililani win. They won 42-14.
Wow, who were they?
We played Alahua.
I know what happened. You were sticking your foot out there and tripping up the opponent and when they run along your side.
I'm cheering so loud. Go, Mililani! They won.
Okay. Hey, well, I'm going to let you go, all right? And give that some consideration. Okay, but give that some consideration, all right? Anyway, that's with that Coast Guard is I want to know about the molasses, and I want to know, if nothing else, the evolution of a response. That's what I'll call it. It's a woeful, lacking response because, you know, I got to tell you, I was there standing and telling them, well, you know, it's from the pier over there in Matson. I had received calls, and the state response people to include Gary Gill. Well, I can't make any statements right now. Well, probably not, because you would be inconsistent with the game that you guys were going to project. But again, I like to say that we've had some major issues here, folks, environmentally, and we're a complete failure on the part of government. Complete failure. And then, where's Neil Abercrombie? If you notice in today's paper, he's saying he's going to intervene and do something. But where is Neil when we have molasses spill, the worst environmental catastrophe that we've had? That I can remember, and I've done some reading and research, the known ones, and there may be substantial when we talk about the pox and avian malaria, that may be right, but that was something different, and we've seen the decline and the demise and the decrease in population of birds or native birds. But in modern times, let's say, what we see is a woefully inadequate response on the part of Neil. He didn't even bother. It didn't even rise to the occasion or to the level of him coming and assuring us that he was reaching out in an aggressive fashion and that he would hold those people in DOT accountable for their failure. Remember, they said in 2012 there was a leak. So Neil Abercrombie was our governor during that time. But also, I told you that one agency is putting together records. That's the Department of Health Clean Water Branch. Now, I'm bracing for a great expose here, because it just based on, we asked for these documents, anything to do with molasses and the spill and the inspections, and it's taking them a week and a half to respond, because they're preparing it. So that tells me that if there was an email from DOT or a letter to from DOT to Mattson about the spill in 2012, and then there was one in June to tell them again, and they were able to get that, well, what happened then? There must be some more substantial occurrence of documentation, because why is it taking the Clean Water Branch so long to respond to our request for records? They're not saying they don't have them. They're not saying they're not going to give them to us. They're saying that we have so many that we have to, such a large amount of records, say, we have to sort through them and then we'll give them to you. So that means it may be revealed that there was a lot more known about this, quote, spill. But again, if they did nothing, or if they did something, and then issued a notice of violation, as they usually do, which is lame, it's like giving a pig a Tootsie Roll, just something to chew on, no substance. So this is what's happening. You have the Clean Water Branch. Now, I talked to the HERE office, we'll call it. That's a Hazardous Environmental Emergency Response. They say they have no documents. They weren't involved. But I'll back up and tell you that I had spoken with Caroline Slider, a former reporter for one of the TV stations, and she's now working with the DOT, and I inquired about any records, inspection of the tanks and what have you, and any leaks or whatever, and I was told by DOT, one of them just wouldn't call me back, and that there's no inspections or anything like that, but they have to adopt EPA rules on tanks above ground. So someone to say that they don't have any records is admitting that they didn't do their job. But apparently they did. And while I was asking for these records, this is per Randy Gruen now, the deputy director who I spoke to directly, he said that they were about 36 hours of time period debating with the Attorney General if, in fact, the letter that they had sent to Mattson was an attorney-client privilege. And I may have mentioned this before, but what it sticks with in my craw is that your government agency, you're supposed to be doing the work of the people, and you're supposed to protect the interests of companies as well. But at what point does a enforcement action where you catch someone leaking a contaminant or a material that's deleterious to fish and wildlife and what have you, and harmful to people in directly or indirectly, what would you need to invoke the attorney-client privilege? Why would you need, you were out there, you took the taxpayers' dollars to enforce and to spend taxpayers' money on the paper you wrote the stupid letter on. And then you now got to call the attorney to determine, ask the attorney general to determine if, in fact, you can release the letter to the public. But you used the public's money to get there in the car you drove, or maybe you swam. You never know. Or some of them slugged. They might have slid it over there. But You took taxpayers' money, took their time, their trust. You took an oath to enforce the law. And then when the public says, well, can I see what you did? Well, we have to check this with the Attorney General, who is by the people, for the people, and ask him if it's okay for us to release this letter, right? Funny thing, on the way to the market. So this kind of craziness is we see it repeat itself over and over and over again. At the landfill, they will go as far as trying, as you know, Gary Sue and Joe Hernandez, they tried to set them up and claim that all of these troubles, the state was involved in it, was going to charge Gary Sue, the inspector for the landfill, for taking bribes and all of these things. And then they end up, because he got a lawyer and dropped, they've then decided, oh, we better back off. But the reality is the violations were occurring at the landfill, and yet no one did anything. And then when they had the medical waste, it was Gary Gill who authorized them to dump it, the medical waste. The records are here, folks. If you're interested in seeing them, or you have specific interests, I'll be happy to provide a copy to you. Mr. Gary Gill, standing on top of the hill, just as soon as they got in office on the Abercrombie, this is the kind of malarkey that ended up being done and projected. This Abercrombie that we know today is not the same one that was throwing blood on soldiers when the kids go to ROTC. One gentleman says they remember him standing there screaming about the rights of Americans and stay out of the war and all of this. But this new breed of Neil Abercrombie is just too many coincidences. You figure this out, and I'll try to quantify it for you. He gets in office and suspends all of the environmental laws and zoning laws and a number of them. You can find that executive order online at carolcox.com. He then does a lot of exemptions to others. And now we got big buildings where he's put his hand up the back of the HCDA and told them to move their lips to and their fingers to sign off and let the buildings go up as high, doubling the height. All kinds of things. This going to offend some of you, but, you know, is this what a Democrat grows up to be? I haven't met one Republican that can rise to the occasion of what Neil Abercrombie has done in the last 4 years, last 3 years. I can't. And what's really painful is to realize that none of yous out there will call it what it is. because we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I'd say we throw out everything. The dishpan that he's in, the washpan, the soapy water. There's no hope. You cannot orchestrate such an effort and action as you, this guy Neil Abercrombie has presented to us at our doorsteps on Christmas morning. We can't. I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you something more polite and kind and what have you. We wouldn't tolerate this if it was Sam Sloan. We'd have him tarred and feathered about right now. Gene Ward, God bless his soul, if we could find him, if he's not trying to get some attention with Kimberly Pine. But we would take him out and hang him. But Neil Abercrombie just shows up and inserts himself and walks out, you know, and the king has spoken. Folks, we had a calamity in the voting process under Neil Abercrombie. We have medical waste being dumped, authorized by his staff, his appointees, Neil Abercrombie. Executive orders to lift, PLDC, public land, Neil Abercrombie. HCDA out of control, Neil Abercrombie. Department of Hawaiian Homelands, screwing the Hawaiians so bad that they now think that that every morning they must look to the east to see Neil's face because he appointed Joby, and Joby sits there, takes the orders. They trample on the rights of Native Hawaiians. They are not there with the best interests of Native Hawaiians. You wouldn't tolerate this if a Republican were in office and did this. You'd be claiming it's the worst thing ever happened to humanity. But Neil Abercrombie gets to show up at your baby's first birthday and nothing said. Now he's going to intervene on behalf of the GMOs. As you heard Gary Hoosier says, he didn't interview any of the public, didn't consult any of the public, but he's going to insert himself now. It's a diversion. And that is consistent with the Miley Shima Bakurs, the Kimberly Pines. They go in, and when big business is involved, we care for business and not your business. It's none of your business, public. That's what they do. So this is crazy times. And the only common element is that you have a Democrat who stood by and saw a train wreck when it came to voter rights. A Democrat who stands by and let environmental catastrophes develop, and they're standing around there with a hanky and a napkin saying, well, you know, we think it's clearing up now. We can see the bottom. The water is clear now. Can't see any fish, but, you know, the good Lord will take care of that. But we've done our job. And, in fact, Matson is going to pay up. And so, you know, I think you all should be applauding us, and we should get bonuses. And in fact, I think there's going to be a special session in the legislature to recognize us and give us awards like they normally do anyway. You know, I don't know if you know that part of this process in the state of Hawaii. You take, for example, and I have it on video and pictures way back when the mercury was spilled by the children at Pu'uwai Maumee Housing. So Blake O'Shea and the other guys involved in making themselves look good, with the rubber arms, they pat themselves on. They had a great gathering in the state legislature and gave themselves pats on the back. But the bottom line is they were responsible for leaving the mercury in the pump house at Pearl Harbor, and the children came along and found it because Cayetano, under his administration, used the money that he got for the cleanup and in turn spent it on something else, left the mercury there. The children find it, take it back to the housing, and what do? They go slam the doors and the gates shut and then try to indict two children. Yeah. This is, and by the way, I must add, the commonality there, the common element was Gary Gill was involved in that one, folks. So he rises to the occasion. We say, oh, he's an environmentalist. That's Gary Gill. He's an environmentalist. He might be. Can't take that away from him. Anything can be an environmentalist. Heck, I'm an environmentalist. Look at me. But on the other hand, you know, at some point you got to know that becoming an environmentalist and being appointed by Neil Abercrombie, you either going to drink the Kool-Aid and then you're going to turn around and try to pass the Kool-Aid to the rest of the folks out there, because believers, and you end up screwing the people. And that's what this entire history, and when it comes to, there's some serious contradictions here when we think Democratic Party, they're good for the environment. Well, they must have missed the boat over here, because there's nothing, the entire structure. We have recycling programs, but if you go dig deep and see who got the recycling programs, it's friends of friends. You see, we built the boiler, $300 and some million, but others were offering to build the same thing for $65 million. But they didn't get the contract. So, Border Water Supply, they're ripping us off. I mean, only thing they don't have is a gun to our head. They have a water meter to our head. And in turn, what's happening? You know, I don't even talk about the rail. There's a billion people fighting the rail and taking issue with that. But the real issue is the integrity and the humanity that's missing amongst these Democrats. You cannot tell me you could have 233,000. And I use that number because I don't trust that number. Just going to tell you. Because if we accept that number, then we should accept or expect that they had a gauge to know how much flowed through from the reservoir, the tank itself, through that pipe in order to accept that. I believe, and this is just me, my suspicions based on who's involved and who's given the information, I believe it was a larger amount than that. And if the leak was occurring back in 2012, do we count that portion of the leak? And what ratio or what rate was it leaking then? Because we were told they just recently use a giant Q-tip of sort, wood and some cotton cloth or something to stick in there into the leak. Well, if that was the case, how much were we losing? And how many times did they load up each day or each week or what have you? So there are some serious issues with this whole process. But anyway, that's that on there. And then we move to the sludge. This gentleman, I wrote a letter, and it's posted at carolcox.com, to Robert Clark and Bev Liddle, L-I-D-D-L-E. And here's the problem. It's not what Robert Clark said. It's what he's not saying. Through our investigation here recently, we found that the material was actually going to PVT landfill, approximately 190.1 tons. I spoke to Pine Ridge. Pine Ridge was receiving the material and was delivering it to PVT. But all of a sudden, an abrupt halt to using them as a service, and then Sir Trucking came into the picture. But I must add that in speaking to Miss Georgette Silva, the owner, no relationship to the Hiram Silva or Sir Trucking, but she tells me, informs me, that she originally were hired to transport, and she transported 9 truckloads at 12 tons, their tandems. Then she also decided in May, because of the distance, they were paying $285 per truckload. She decided to take a semi at 20 tons each and deliver it. She also disclosed that she, because she has a company and permitted and all, legally permitted and operating, was interested in the soil too, because of she processes soil for agriculture and landscaping purposes. She revealed to me that in the process, she determined that it was too salty and prove toxic or fatal to plants, so it wasn't conducive to her business. So in communicating all of this, where does Robert Clark and others come off with, and Kimberly Pine saying, well, we're studying it and farmers may be using it? Why don't they just listen to the experts? So they also say in their permit, Hawaii Kai Marina, they say that Sur Trucking and Pine Ridge had all the permits and everything. But here's the problem. What permits did they have? They didn't have, I can tell you, and this is a new development, they did not have a permit to operate a trucking business on agricultural land. So it might be disclosed Monday. I'm letting the cat out of the bag. But he's been cited and ordered immediately to remove all of his trucking business on that property. So they decide to remove, and they submitted in their dredge work plan, dredge disposal work plan, they being the Hawaii Kai Marina and its contractor, American Marine Corporation, submitted this plan to the Army Corps of Engineer. And in there it said that it was going to go to PVT. But it didn't go to PVT. It went to PVT for a little while. So my interest is, and this is all speculation, and I've asked Bev Little to provide documents, and the you listeners out there that are from Hawaii Kai who pays for this, you might want to ask, is American Marine Corporation submitting bills still suggesting that they were, at that time, this period of time, sending it to PVT and being charged $42 a ton while they were actually paying less and sending it to Sur Trucking? Just asking. So these are the kinds of things that Mr. Robert Clark is not telling you. Not because he's ignorant, and not because the Waianae people are ignorant. However he twists it and turns it contextually, what you're not saying contributes to the discord in these two communities, Mr. Clark. This is the problem. You don't tell us openly that you were going to ship it out, and I've reported this early on in the beginning, that they were going to put it on the barge, but the barge, they discovered, couldn't fit under the bridge, so, oops, $4.4 million project. Oops, mistake. What do we do with it now? Oh, well, we'll send it to PVT. Okay, good. But then the problem is, did they go back to William Isler's office and say, look, we're going to transport it over land? Unlike what the permit said in the CDUA that you issued us, we were not going to do a traffic study because we were not going to transport it over land. Mr. Clark, you need to come clean with the public. Tell us why, or if you did, in fact, submit for a traffic plan, or if you were exempted. So there are so many changes that went on behind the scene that, and then the public try to respond, like we are found ourselves in the GMO issue, the landfill issue, the molasses issue. We can't offer a rebuttal because they're secrets. So anyway, there's a lot more to come, and we will submit this for you truckers out there that want to operate a business, a trucking business on ag land. I think you owe Mr. Hiram Silva and Sur Trucking the honors of letting them know that one little accident has triggered this issue. And so I understand that the community out there in Waianae and other places are going to be more aggressive in asking the city to file actions and legal actions to correct this practice. So we'll see you next week. And we'll be talking molasses until they come clean. And I hope to have more answers to you about the Coast Guard issue. And we'll talk to you later. See us at Carol at carolcox.com podcast. Thank you. Hey, and don't forget Grooves for Gloves, October 5th, 2013, out there at the Kalailoa Raceway Park. And you can, it's about helping the kids out. It's a benefit fundraiser. Call 808-668-4285 and help this cause. Again, it's about boxing, and the kids will benefit from it. So, again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Listening to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, 1080 on the AM dial.